HMOB. T-Bone, and that's JD.
That was a nice cue, though. That was a different song. But I was spinning some rhymes while we were listening to the opening track. It's the end to Ray Gun by Ghostface, and I think it's produced by MF Doom appears in it. So if MF Doom appears in it, usually that means that he had some parlay with the beat.
But those lyrics were taken from
Lynch Mob song. Yeah, I mean, I was
rolling with the motherfucking Lynch Mob.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Good.
All right. Well, we're back. I think we had a 2 week
a 3 week vacation.
Was it 3?
I don't know. It's a long time.
Been a long time since STEM days.
Pretty much, man.
It's been tough. We're in kind of like shutdown mode towards my school year. So between stuff I got to take care of at my school,
baseball playoffs, and
soccer. My oldest son graduated, so
15-hour days at work.
The Warriors,
Warriors
being
Warriors scaring the hell out of me against OKC.
It's scaring you so much you can't watch a game.
Okay, see you later.
But yeah, Choklahoma City.
Choklahoma, how about Chocolate City? Oh, that's a Pete Rock song.
Okay,
you'll see all smooth on stage drinking Cisco.
Yes, not to be confused with Erotic City, which is a Prince song.
Yeah, and he died too.
Yes.
He died during that. Well, we talked about Prince.
Yeah, we did talk about Prince.
And Kimbo Slice died today?
Yeah, yesterday. And
yesterday? Okay.
And
well, he died today, but it's going to be yesterday. It depends on when I post it, right?
Well,
maybe 2 days ago then, if you really look at it.
Whenever as we sit here live, he died yesterday. Of course, Muhammad Ali passed away on Friday.
Yeah, I like Byron Saxton's, like, I like how he had to say something, and he didn't say a goddamn thing on Raw. He just, like, you know, it was just like the standard kind of like, he was such an inspiration. Really? You think, Byron? Yeah, that's good idea on that, dude. Yeah.
I fast forward quite a bit of Raw. Like,
what?
Not you. I mean, man. I saw all the matches, but anything, yeah, I didn't really want to watch their Ali retrospective. And a lot of the show was recapping of
it was a good retrospective, though. It showed how involved he was in the WWE universe.
Okay.
You know, when Gorilla Monsoon, like, put, you know, did an airplane spin on him and stuff. And
right. Yeah.
You don't care, though.
No, I mean, not buying. I saw that. You know, I had seen that clip a few times on Twitter, and you know, a little bit of the stuff when he fought Inoki. I read a couple stories about that, but it's just sometimes like.
You think they're trying to claim some fame or something?
I
totally disagree. I mean, you're the one that fast-forwarded the segment.
Well, I'm not saying that they did in this case, because I didn't watch it. I'm just saying, in general, like, you know, they blow so much smoke about, you know, who's great and this and that.
Are you saying Muhammad Ali wasn't great?
No, I'm saying that WWE, in some cases, come off disingenuous, propping certain people up, and I don't want to listen to that. I've seen enough, like, you know, legitimate sports people talking about a lot of the great things that Muhammad Ali has done.
Like who?
Actually, like, I woke up early on Sunday because basically I wake up at 6 in the morning no matter what. And I watched the sports reporters, and it was actually, you know, they dedicated like 90% of the show to that. They had like one segment on the NBA Finals, but everything else was just talking about Muhammad Ali. Watching Pardon the Interruption, Wilbon and Kornheiser did justice to Muhammad Ali, and I didn't need, I'm not saying it was bad, I don't know, I didn't watch it, but there's a lot of times where, you know, I watch him just kind of blow smoke about a lot of other things to where I don't want to sit there and have to, like, wonder, is this whole segment they're doing contrived, or is it like, there's no credibility with me listening to Michael Cole talk about anything. So I didn't want to listen to it.
Well, he wasn't really talking. They're showing like old clips of him, like, involved with like old, you know, WWF wrestlers at the time and stuff, and the Inoki. So he wasn't really talking about it.
Okay.
I think like JBL said, I think he said one of the fights that he had against Joe Frazier was one of the best he's ever seen. And then he had Byron Saxton, like, after like kind of the whole segment. Just like say like absolute like no substance whatsoever. It's like you can tell like this guy like has no clue who Muhammad Ali is, mm-hmm. And I mean we grew up at a time when we didn't know who Muhammad Ali was when we were like 4 or 5 years old. but you knew he was somebody, right? Like, you'd see him on TV, and you knew he was something special.
My dad explained pretty well who he was, so I had a good idea who he was. But like, yeah, we came up, we grew
well,
up.
Well, I didn't have a dad at 5 years old, so yeah, good for you.
Well, I'm sorry to, sorry to open up old wounds there.
It's not an old wound. It's just right now, you're like being like an elitist right now with Muhammad Ali, dude.
I'm not being an elitist with Muhammad Ali at
you
all.
You just seem kind of perturbed. Are you getting tired of the talk or what?
No. It's very specific to
just that one thing.
WWE.
Yeah.
Like, promote up guys. Like I said, like, I heard enough really good stuff about Muhammad Ali over the weekend to the time where, by the time they did it on Monday, you know, I'd heard enough, and I just don't want to.
You don't want to hear Michael Cole talk about Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, he didn't say anything, but like what you're telling me about Saxton, that's exactly what I don't want to hear. It's just some guy that they wrote some script for to like just, you know, say something that is not like bringing anything new to the conversation. Just because he felt like he had to say something about Muhammad Ali.
Well, I thought, I'm not going to talk about anything doing anybody justice because, you know, it's funny that you're reacting this way, and I'm kind of used to this type of reaction, not from you, but just like when someone dies and stuff and you kind of have to listen to the rigmarole of just like, oh, you know, like even like him, like saying, you know, everybody's like the greatest, you know, like when he died, it's like the greatest. I'm like, dude, I'm like, well, wait a minute. I'm like, is he really the greatest? Is he the greatest boxer to ever step in the ring? I'm like, that's debatable. Right. And it's just kind of, I can understand where you're coming from because I feel like it's, and you're talking to a former guy that worked in journalism, but it's really shoddy. It's just like really, it's kind of really, an easy way out to call someone the greatest. And I mean, what's the meaning of the greatest, right? I mean, and that's kind of like I remember when Ted Williams died, I was right toying around with headlines when he died because I was doing the front page of a sports section. And one of them was like, you know, greatest hitter that ever lived. And my manager, he's like, dude, he's like, how do you know he's the greatest hitter that ever lived? You know, it's like, that's what people called him. That's what he called himself. And I thought the New York Times actually did a really good job with their front page, you know, they had a break everything down, they did a special section. And all it had was, it just had Ali, and it had, you know, when he was born and when he died. So it's funny that, you know, like I'm kind of numb to it. So it's kind of, I don't know if I would say it's refreshing, but it's kind of, my kind of whole thing is like, you know, dude, it's like, you know, what's going to happen, right? I mean, you know, like people aren't going to, it's very easy for someone to value someone by saying like, oh, he's the greatest, but what made him so good? You know, like what made him so great? And, you know, and that's what I was trying to get to before, you know, you still really said that you had a dad to talk to you when you were like 4 or 5 years old. But what I was trying to say was like, you know, and I'm joking, of course, but like I had no idea who this guy was. But I knew like just like watching him on TV that he was someone. And I didn't know the whole backstory with, you know, with him, you know, when you're 5, 6 years old of him, like, you know, like some people saying he's dodging the draft, other people saying that he's standing up for his religious beliefs. There was a lot of strife, you know, during that time, right? I mean, to pair yourself with Malcolm X was like the direct opposite of comparing your, you know, say pairing up with Martin Luther King. So there's so much tension during that time. And then not only do you have that tension, but the way that he was able to perform during his fights. I mean, I would probably say if nobody's seen like Thrill in Manila, like in its entirety, that is one of the most brutal fights I've ever seen. And it wasn't like Ali like overwhelmingly won. I mean, he won that fight, but I mean, Frazier, and that's kind of like the whole thing too, is like with Frazier, I mean, Frazier was such a good boxer, and Frazier just got his ass kicked. But at the same time, like he, I mean, both those guys pretty much killed themselves that night. Mm. That's one of the most brutal fights I've ever seen. It's one of the best fights I've ever seen. But I'm, you know, and I remember watching when I was like 12, 13, and then I saw it, you know, 15, 16 years old, I saw it again. I was going, and knowing that Frazier, towards the end of his life, you know, had some form of dementia or some sort of brain damage. And of course, Muhammad Ali had, you know, having his Parkinson's, and just watching these fights and going like, man, it's like, it's kind of like when Edge, right? When Edge got the concussion and we're trying to, no, not Edge, Dolph Ziggler, when he got the concussion from Del Rio, and we're trying to watch the match. We're like, was that it? I mean, that's pretty, it's pretty sobering to watch that. Just going like, dude, I'm like, you know, who are we to know, like watch or anybody watching it then, like 20 years later, the way and the condition that these guys are and like the toll that it took. And you don't see fights like that anymore. And it was just it's one of the best fights I've ever seen, but it came at a high cost as well.
Yeah, and you know, you say like, you know, is he the greatest, like, in terms of boxing? You know, I would probably tend to think that he was. You know, I obviously didn't watch, you know,
he's a great fighter.
In his time, yeah. and didn't see, like, you know, some of the guys that had come before him. You know, we're kind of a product of the Tyson era, and like, you know, Tyson had that run of dominance, but you know, I think that Ali's probably more sustained. But I think like what is not really debatable, if you want to call him the greatest in terms of like an athlete that like, you know, like took a stand like on several things and you know, said what he believed and then like backed it up. You know, and this time, you know, I love Michael Jordan, right? But you know, in terms of a guy who like wouldn't take a stand on anything because, you know, it's going to hurt endorsements. Like, you don't, and most athletes have followed suit with that. Like Tiger Woods in his height, you know, he wouldn't take a stand on anything. And a lot of these athletes today, like, I think now you're starting to see a few more athletes speak out a little bit, but it's more like when there's something that like social media, like starts to like hop on, like some of these athletes will support, but like just to be a man on an island standing on his own, and like, you know, sacrificing like the prime years of his boxing career, which is one of the shorter careers that you're going to have in your prime anyway, because you know he was going to stand up for what he believed in. Like that's like what I really respect, is like people that like they have a platform, because all these pro athletes have a platform, but none of them want to use it.
So let me, I think, because I'm kind of feeling the same way. So let me see if I'll ask you this. Some of the problem that I had with kind of these remembrances and stuff is like you talk to a guy like LeBron James, and you know LeBron James, I mean he you know him and Dwayne Wade or the Heat wore the hoods and everything like that, and so you know, and some people have vilified them for it, but it wasn't as bad as say Ali. But I think kind of the problem that I have is that, you know, that like guys like LeBron James are openly saying like, well, you know, he's allowed us to make all this money and do all this stuff. But what you're forgetting, you know, and people are just seeing like how he was like, kind of like you're at a time being a minority, and I can't speak for black people, but Muhammad Ali was like the first like black man that I heard, right? Like just saying what he wanted to say, not saying because he was black. And there wasn't a lot with him saying like, you know, I'm a black man, so this is the way it is. It's like, you know, he it was like, you know, I want to be called Muhammad Ali, and he was lucky, and the other guy was lucky on the other same coin, like him and Howard Cosell. I mean, they were made for each other during that time. But he wasn't, I mean, I guess growing up, I wasn't really looking when I was like 5 or 7 years old. I never really heard like him saying like, I'm a black guy, and I have to act this way. It's like, he just was who he was. And I think there's people that transcend their race while at the same time still fighting for their race. Mm-hmm. And for someone like LeBron James or even like Floyd Mayweather to go like, oh, you know, he laid the groundwork. It's like, dude, shut up. You know, it's like you guys are multimillionaires, right? You don't do anything. I mean, you don't, yeah, you can do photo shoot stuff. You know, there's probably some charities that you do as well, but you're not like a Kanye West after and saying that George Bush doesn't care about black people, right? Like there's no activism on that part. And maybe the time for that type of person isn't right now. I mean, I think there needs to be a new, there has to be a new kind of athlete with the social media area that we haven't had yet. And to kind of compare Muhammad Ali to like what his contemporaries are doing now, I don't think you can do that, because I mean the world has changed. Money has changed a lot of things. My whole thing is like, and I go back to journalism again, is like reporters shouldn't go to these guys and have these guys be like the end all say on how what the impact of Muhammad Ali was. The funny thing is like Jim Rome, on Monday he interviewed Dr. Harry Edwards. And I am not a big fan of that guy. And for people who don't know who he is, he did a lot of consulting work for the 49ers, was on the sideline a lot of times. And usually when he's not, I mean, it's not like I don't agree with Harry Edwards, but it's kind of like the same thing that you were saying with like the whole kind of segment with, with Muhammad Ali on WWE, you know, on when they did it, is when they did the kind of special and, you know, paying homage to him. It's like, I've heard what Dr. Hayward, what he has said before. But at the same time, I mean, it's like, now is the time to reflect. And I think a guy, you know, for Jim Rome to interview someone like Harry Edwards, who has met Muhammad Ali, who has fought the same fight in a different way that he has, in a different capacity, I think that's the person you need to start at talking to.
Yeah, because he's, you know, like we're the information we get about Muhammad Ali is generally like second, third hand, right? But like, you know, a guy like Harry Edwards was there in that time. So yeah, that would be a good. You know, I didn't hear it obviously, but that would be a good. That would be someone I would listen to if I had the opportunity to.
I will say one thing. When ESPN had like his top 100 athletes of all time and stuff, right? Michael Jordan was number one, I think. Babe Ruth might have been number two, or Muhammad Ali was number. It was Muhammad Ali and Babe Ruth, they're interchanged. But I'll tell you right now, like watching that Muhammad Ali, you know, when they did the special on Muhammad Ali, like I like cried, you know, with some of the stories they would say. You know, like I think Muhammad, there was one like, you know, something where Muhammad was this kid was like going to die at any time. And, you know, and he's like, well, he said something. And pretty much what the kid said, and I'm messing this up, but the kid says like, well, you know, I'll tell God that I met you, you know, and you're like, you know, whatever it was. And it was just like, whoa, you know, like, you know, Muhammad Ali, you know, not only did he fight for what he believed in, but he was there for, you know, kids lit up his life. And he, you know, he has more of an impact, right? And I think when that came out, when Michael Jordan was number one, I was like, yeah, you got to be kidding me. You know, like, that's such a cliche of ESPN to like pick like the most popular guy at the time. And it's funny, like there's some, you know, like some of my contemporaries, like I was talking to Mike Oz, and I was talking about like Babe Ruth and Michael Jordan, like who's like the bigger icon in sports. And he said like Michael Jordan. I was like, what? But Babe Ruth started the whole flipping thing. Like Babe Ruth was like the first guy. And like, you can say like, I mean, what stories do you have of Michael Jordan that are outside of him on the court? What stories do you have of Babe Ruth? What stories do you have of Muhammad Ali that transcend the sport that he was in? And I think that's a true mark of the athlete who he is. I mean, I think like if you were to like to bring up Muhammad Ali or bring up Babe Ruth, you're not going to talk about, you know, my first thing I'm not going to talk about is like throw him Manila. I mean, I'm going to talk about like what he meant in terms of, you know, what he did socially. And then even like talking to your dad, I mean, your dad talked a lot too. And he always commended, you know, Muhammad Ali for what he did. And your dad's from like, you know, he's middle America, right? He's from Iowa, but you know, Muhammad Ali was able to like influence him in a positive way. And I don't think Michael Jordan does that. I don't think Floyd Mayweather does that. And I don't think LeBron James does that as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's no point even bringing up Floyd Mayweather on that. Yeah,
but he's been brought up though, right? I mean, like they've talked to Floyd Mayweather. I was like, why the hell are you going to talk to Floyd Mayweather? What the hell has Floyd Mayweather done? You know, and I can understand you talking about LeBron James, but I mean, LeBron James hasn't done anything, dude.
You know, I think
most. And granted, LeBron James doesn't have to do anything, right? Because it's not, there's no turmoil, right? I mean, there's turmoil, but it wasn't as bad as it was when you were in the middle of the Vietnam War,
right. I think that's kind of what it comes down to, right? You know, that was just a really tumultuous time in the country. And, you know, for him to be standing up to, you know, with the majority. And that's the other thing that I got to was like, you know, from when we're, you know, old enough to start understanding what's going on. You know, by that time, Muhammad Ali was pretty much universally revered. But in the time when this was happening, I think most of America did not like him because he was going against everything that like middle America wanted to be, right? And so for him to take that, like we kind of got to, you know, the positive side of it once everyone was on board with what he had done was good, or whether good or not, like at least commendable, like, you know, that he was standing up on his principles. But in its own time, like, you know, he took a ton of heat for it, and again, lost 4 years of the prime of his athletic career.
Well, even so, his timing was good. I mean, he had great timing, right? Like whether it was in the ring, whether he was on the mic. And one thing that the WWE did bring up, and he was in, you know, they interviewed him. I don't know who interviewed, but he was on a show, and he was like, yeah, he's like, you know, I got the greatest from Oh God, I'm blanking, dude. Gorgeous George? No, who was it? Was
the wrestler?
Yeah, Gorgeous George. Saying like, he was the greatest and stuff and everything. I want to say it's the first Nature Boy.
Buddy Rogers?
It might have been Buddy Rogers. Yeah, I think it was Buddy Rogers or Gorgeous George, one of the two. But he was saying that that's where he kind of, he's like, oh, I should start talking this way, and I'm paraphrasing and doing a bad job of it. But I think there was like a really kind of positive feeling towards Muhammad Ali, but it really, but then I think everybody realized how great this guy was when it was the 1996 Olympics. I mean, like when, cause we're watching and it's like one of the Olympics since, Los Angeles, and you're starting to see like, they're saying like, oh, all these great Olympians, and we're going like, okay, like here's this person won 8 gold medals. And like, I think Janet Evans had like, at the time she had like 9 gold medals or 8 gold medals, like during her whole time as a swimmer. And then we're going like, okay, Janet Evans, like line of the torch, right, that's fine. And then she gets to Muhammad Ali, comes out of nowhere and the place just explodes. And I remember watching him going like, yeah, this is probably one of the greatest like athletes of all time. Right. And I think once he did that, I think it was already there, but then it allowed us to go like, and he, it was his shining moment, right? Right. Out of so many that he's had.
Well, and that's kind of what they were saying on that Sports Reporters was like, that was kind of a moment where he was able to come out and like
unite everybody
and just kind of and like just kind of soak up the appreciation that everyone had for him universally in the public. And so yeah, that was a pretty cool moment too. So
did you see that when it happened, as it was happening?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then cuz I think, I'm trying to remember if that's around when, if I'm trying to remember if it was known that he had Parkinson's, or if that was kind of like the moment when like it started kind of
people knew about it, but
no one had like, seen it, right?
Don't see, don't tell, or
right,
whatever.
Right. Yeah. And don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so then that was a moment as well. So yeah, I mean, probably could, with as little knowledge as we have about Ali, we could probably like do the whole hour show just talking about like stuff we've read or stuff we've heard or this and that. But I mean, it was an amazing guy with an amazing life. And I just think, yeah, like I wish that we still had athletes like that, like not talking about skill set wise. I mean, that's one thing and that's great on its own, but just like socially and like, people that are willing to use the platform that they have and kind of stand up for things.
He was like one of the, last pegs of like the honest athlete. Right. Cause even like someone was talking to Larry Holmes. I remember Larry Holmes like jumped off a car and like elbowed another boxer. Like they got, remember there's like that big old fight outside where there's like, you remember, it was like Larry Holmes. I don't know what it was, but it was kind of like, you had like the honest athlete where they said what they wanted to say. If you pissed them off, they would fight you.
Yeah.
Riddick Bowe, it's like some boxer crossed him. He didn't care about the money deal. He didn't care about that. This guy was challenging Riddick Bowe, and Riddick Bowe popped the guy right before the fight, Muhammad Ali was kind of like one of the last guys that just said what they wanted to say. Didn't care about endorsements. Didn't care about anything else. Now everything is so scripted and so, predictable in terms of what you're going to get in an interview or whatever it is. And there's something to be said about, I think that's kind of what we miss, right? I think like the last one that someone really said something was like Shaquille O'Neal, right? Like cussing on air. That was like a cloud, like Shaq on air. He's like, I don't give a bleep. So yeah, I mean, and that's kind of like the whole thing is like, we're kind of waiting for the next athlete in this new day and age and this new day and age, but in the land of social media, like a real like kind of professional athlete that isn't kind of contrived or isn't plotted out like in the wrestling. That's why they have us.
Yes.
Yeah. So speaking of contrived and planned out, I want to talk about this match where there's been a lot of talk, maybe too much talk. That's from U2. It's from a U2 album. If anybody got it. You didn't get it because you didn't listen to U2.
Nope.
My girl, I tell my girls that I was like part of U2, and they get all pissed off. They're like, you were part of U2? And then I start singing all the songs and stuff in this like really like girly voice and stuff. Just really makes them mad. But I digress. So, a lot of talk about this, a lot of positive, a lot of negative. And I want to see where you stand, and hopefully I can get out. You care enough about my opinion to see where I stand. But we're talking about Ricochet, and I can't say the last Will Ospreay. Yeah. So you watched the match at my urging?
Well, I'd been wanting to watch it anyway, but then you said today you said you wanted to talk about it. So, you know, I figured I want to. Yeah, I've heard so much both sides. Read more than heard, but you know, I want to see it for myself before I really talk about it, because, you know, I've seen the highlights. I saw the highlights, you know, the night of through Twitter, and, you know, some of that stuff was pretty impressive. But then, you know, all that backlash came out, and before I got here and like talked about it, I figured I should see, because I think there's a lot of validity on both sides of the argument. And you know, it was a pretty good match, but yeah, Will Ospreay is like very big on the like contrived like spots that are not really believable. It is a lot of that stuff that I really don't like, that lucha style, and yet there was still some really good athleticism in there. There's some spots that, you know, look good and I think were legit. But then there was a lot of just unnecessary, like, backflipping and doing this and that.
Yeah, that one spot where they're both around the ropes and backflip. And
right.
They're not even trying to hit anybody. They're just doing a flip just to do it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. I mean, I think, I think one of the best guys that was talking about it this week was MVP. And he's talking a lot about how, like, you know, wrestling's performance art. And it's kind of like... what you can make it what, like, anybody can make it what they want it to be, right? So it doesn't have to be, you know, what it was like 30, 40 years ago. Now I like, my opinion, without like getting into the details of the match,
you kind of have to get to the details of the match, right?
Yeah, we will, but I'm just saying, like, my opinion is that I don't have any problem with guys doing that. And I think there's definitely a place for it, but it probably isn't like exactly my type of match. But I think that overall, as an industry, like, especially if you want to take like a show, like any kind of pay-per-view that's a 3-hour show, right? I think there's room to have that kind of match along with like your more traditional kind of matches. And then everybody's happy. I think Ricochet is still... I like Ricochet. I think he made Ospreay look pretty good by selling offense and by, you know, taking some of those moves that Ospreay's giving out and like making it look really good. You know, Ricochet walks that fine line of being a little bit too like making it like an acrobatic performance rather than a wrestling match. It doesn't feel like a fight, right? And that's what kind of like. I think Josh Barnett, that was one of his major points, is like, you know, this thing's supposed to look like a fight, and that thing doesn't look like a fight. And I think Cornette was kind of along those lines as well. And I haven't heard the podcast yet, but like, there was not a Twitter beef, but there was like a good discussion that MVP and Barnett were having on Twitter. And then MVP's like, come, you know, just come on the podcast and let's talk about it. And so I want to listen to that podcast. I haven't gotten a chance to yet, but I think that's kind of what it comes down to, is like, yeah, I feel like it should, I think there's room for things like that, but I do think ultimately it should kind of look like a fight. There was a lot of things within that match that I thought were good, that were, yeah, this is good, like progressive wrestling. And then there was a lot of spots that I thought were just kind of like, what is that? Like, there's one, Ospreay has like he has one move that's like, mm-hmm, kind of like a Canadian destroyer, yeah, but it's a DDT. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that looked pretty bogus.
Yeah.
There's the one, I can't remember what it's called, but it's the one, I remember you used it in the video game a little bit.
Is that flipping, like, yeah, he spins around the head and stuff, the armor?
Yeah, that's completely unbelievable. And then the finish was a springboard cutter, like the John Cena style, which, I mean, he did it 100 times better than Cena, but I'm still having a hard time buying it. But I think part of the reason why it looks so good, Ricochet sold the hell out of it. Mm-hmm. Austin's biggest, Austin liked the match, but he was saying that he thought like that they didn't sell for each other on some of the offense. And I was looking for that. I kind of see where he's coming from. But yeah, overall, I mean, it's a good match. But yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff that was. I think they could have streamlined it and made it look more like a fight. But you know, to each his own. I'm not gonna come out and say like, you know, it's trash and people shouldn't be doing it, because I think there's a place for it.
Yeah. So one thing that Austin said as well was that, you know, he grew up, he fell in love with wrestling with like the WCW NWA style in the mid 80s. And that's when I really, you know, like 87, 88, you know, 86, I watched NWA. That's when I really started liking wrestling, that type of product. So I'm kind of in the same vein in terms of what my wrestling style is. I think the athleticism of both those guys, it's off the charts. I mean, there is a place for that athletic ability. The problem that I had was that it was like they had the ring, and then they had the footsteps to teach you how to like do the waltz and stuff in the tango. That's really kind of what it felt like. It's like these guys are like looking down at, you know, some spots are looking down on the ground, and they're like, okay, here's my spot here. They're running by each other, and it was super staged. The reason why I don't like indie wrestling is because it's just a spot fest, and it's just a bunch of hacks, athletically gifted hacks, that can do all these crazy spots. But what's the story that you're telling? I'm a big fan of Ricochet, but in that same vein, that when I watched the Ibushi and Ricochet match, I felt the beginning part was really staged, and there was some parts I was like, dude, this is so weak, you know, because it's like lucha style, right? It's like these guys are like lucha style. You can get a gun, right? Shoot the guy in the head, and the guy will still live. You know, I mean, it's so soft, it's so fake, and then Ibushi and Ricochet, once they got rid of all those spots and they started like actually wrestling, and some of the moves they did, it made sense. When Ricochet did this, you know, did a move. He got either Ricochet, Frankensteiner, Ibushi, and Ibushi landed on his feet, or Ricochet did. That made sense, but it's the only time that happened. I mean, there were so many times during this match where these guys are landing on their feet after a flip or whatever it is. I think both of these guys can be really good wrestlers, and I like Ricochet as well. But you need to. My biggest thing is that you need to learn how to tell a story. You know, and I don't want to say that it needs to be a fight. But I mean, those spots are so contrived, right? It's like one of them was like, you know, outside the ring, and Osprey like, you know, lands on Ricochet's shoulders, and you know, and then whatever it is, and then he turns it around and does it like a reverse hurricane rana. You know, it's just like, I mean, you're just like watching, this match, and you're watching Ricochet, and Ricochet is just like helping him get in position for this move,
right?
And I'm trying to sit here and go, okay, if me and you were in the crowd during this match, okay, we would have been thoroughly entertained. And in the moment, we probably would have been like cheering and going like, damn, you see that? Damn, did you see that? But after you kind of step away from from the arena, I don't know if we're walking out saying like, that's the best match I've ever seen. I think what we would say is what we're saying right now is going like, dude, I'm like, okay, these guys are gifted, but can they wrestle?
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of like the whole thing is like, you're saying there's a place for it. If you put it within the confines of what the Super J is, and it's supposed to be like, you know, all of these guys that are just doing crazy moves, and I think some websites said, you know, are saying like, you know, the fans, that's their type of wrestling, that's the wrestling that they want to watch. Okay, you can say that, but you've never been to Japan. I want to know how many Super J Cups you have seen. Because I remember a lot of Super J Cups where I'm seeing Benoit, where I'm seeing, you know, Guerrero as the Black Tiger, and the Great Sasaki and stuff. I mean, those were matches, right? So, I mean, I think, and those are the same audience, you know, that watched that match. So
what was really weird was, so I watched it on Daily Motion. So it was one of those matches that they had. It was like the hard camera with no commentary. So a couple of things that really stood out for me, being that there was no commentary, was the weirdest thing. It's matches in Japan, and they're doing the "This is awesome" chant.
Yeah,
and that really started making me suspicious. Like usually, if I'm getting the "This is awesome" match, it's kind of a shitty match, right? And then I forget. And the holy shit chant came in too, which I'm like, I was kind of wondering how that happened, because I wouldn't think there'd be that many Americans in the crowd to be doing that. The other thing was, dude, Ospreay's got a pretty, he's got a pretty foul mouth in the ring. Like, he cussed, like, a good 5-6 times, like, which is interesting. It's funny, like, you know, you get a little bit of that with Bullet Club, right? Like, if you ever watch some of the promos, like, they're cussing in their promos, and because it's Japan and they don't know what they're saying, but it's just kind of strange. Like, he was very open with the F-bombs in that, you know, in that match and stuff, which I thought was, it wasn't either here nor there. I just found it very interesting to hear that. But yeah, no, I think that what I'm saying is, like, there was a lot of stuff that happened in that match that works in any match, right? Like, one good example was, like, there was one of the times...
Don't tell me the double kick.
Huh?
You don't tell me about the double kick spot they did.
That was fine.
Yeah, that's fine. I didn't like to lead up to that where they're both on the ring and stuff, right, or on the turnbuckle.
But what I was saying, there was a time where Ricochet was going to go for his like fireman carriage into the kick, and when he threw Ospreay up, then Ospreay like turned that into a cutter. Yeah. Like that was really good.
That was good. Yeah,
that was really,
and that works.
Was, yeah, and that, like, that to me, that's akin to like the spot where Rollins and like try to do the stomp and Orton turned it into the cutter. Like, that's progressive stuff. That's great wrestling. Mm-hmm. Like, no matter what you're doing.
But that finished the match, though. You know what I'm
saying?
That
wasn't the finish of the match.
He didn't finish it?
No, the finish was the springboard cutter. That was like a false
finish. Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. Okay.
Because Ricochet came back, right?
No. But I'm talking about that was the finish of the match for Seth Rollins.
And so
what I'm trying to say is, like, you have such a great move like that where you can explode, and the crowds will explode, and if it wins you the match, I think that would be like the ultimate progression, right?
And that's your finish right there.
Yeah.
Not the sprint. And I'm granted, his springboard cutter was respectable.
It looked good.
Yeah, but like more because, like, Ricochet, like, he got the full forward body lean, whereas his face hit the ground before the rest of his body.
I think, you know, you're saying there's a place for it, and I think there is a place for it. I'm not a fan of it, of there being a place for it, because I think there are people that will like that match. And I've read some hacks saying, like, oh, you know, I fell in love with wrestling again. But I think it might have been Bleacher Report. He's like, the only product I've ever seen was, like, WWE in 2012. I'm like, dude, I'm like, shut the hell up, Dean. You know, I'm like, don't start talking about wrestling in 2012. Like, do your homework.
Yeah.
Right? And because if you're talking about 2012, which was kind of a lull during the business, you know, it's like, don't come at me talking about this stuff. But what I do want to say is that match has a place in wrestling, but the only place that it has in terms of where I see it can go anywhere is that this should be like a stepping stone. I think that you should look at this match, see what worked in the match, because there's a lot of things that didn't work in that match, and tell a story that way. And for anybody that this is the first time you're seeing Ricochet, watch him versus Ibushi, because it will have the stuff that you like in it, but then it's a natural progression match. And the other thing that I want to say too is that a lot of the stuff that they're doing, video game stuff, I have no problem with that, you know, but make it special, right? And what is even worse about the whole thing is that I saw two springboards. I saw Ospreay do a springboard out of the ring, and I saw Ricochet do a springboard out of the ring. It's like, dude, like, that's all you guys got to do. I'm like, I mean, you guys have the best springboards in the business. You don't need to do all this stupid, like, upside down, you know, guy on the knee, you know, submission move. I'm like, it, I mean, it's like, that's the video game. And some of Ospreay moves were straight out. They come straight out of a video game, you know, and it's like, they're showing that they can do it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think Macho Man and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, opened a lot of doors for a lot of people. And Steamboat always likes to say that, you know, him and Flair did way better matches, like, back in the 80s or whatever, you know, like in the late 70s, early 80s. But I don't think I would have been ready to really appreciate watching Flair and Steamboat do their three sets of matches, and one of those matches was a best out of three. I wouldn't have been able to appreciate how well they did that match without being introduced to it by Macho Man and Steamboat, because I didn't know any better back then, right? I mean, it's like WWF product, they're the best. But watching this Macho Man and Steamboat match opened my eyes to a performer like Ric Flair, right? Like, watching Macho Man play that great heel character, and then after that match going like, man, like, Macho Man should have won that match. Macho Man opened me up to, like, watching, like, Ric Flair, even though he was a major heel character. I'm like, man, like, Flair is my guy. Like, that guy. Because I'm watching the Steamboat match with Flair going like, man, like, Steamboat's good. I said, but Flair is, like, to me, is, like, the driving force behind this whole match. So I would like to have that match of Ricochet and Osprey open the door for, say, like, a Seth Rollins going against an AJ Styles, or a Seth Rollins going against Nakamura, and then really blowing the house down. You have a ton of athleticism there. I don't know so much now with the way Seth Rollins is, but having that type of match where you have guys that are technicians in the ring, can tell a good story in the ring, are still somewhat athletic at the same time. And opening that up to get a better match than what we had with this match.
Yeah, see, I kind of feel like the Ricochet and Osprey match is kind of a step backwards in terms of what you're talking about there, right? Because I don't think that there's anything in the ring they're doing that Seth Rollins can't do, or that AJ Styles can't or couldn't do. But they're past that point. And
they being Rollins and...
Yeah, yeah. They're past the point of just doing spots for the sake of doing spots.
You know, one match, you know, I think you're right. And I'm going to let you finish. But, right, I mean, one match that came to mind, and the match that I look at fonder now than when it happened, was Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, and Christopher Daniels at three-way. Yeah, the triple threat. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a big spot fest. But it was a good match. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a better match than this Ricochet and Ospreay. Yeah. But it kind of made me remember that match as well.
Yeah, well, because, I mean, and you got Samoa Joe to keep everything grounded, right? And so you can have, like AJ and Daniels doing, you know, some more progressive high-flying stuff. But then, like, Samoa Joe is always going to keep it looking like a fight, I think. I haven't seen that one. Something I want to see, but I think that's kind of what you get with Samoa Joe, right? But yeah, I don't know. Like you've been talking, you referenced a few times Ricochet Ibushi match, right? I mean, I think this is a step backwards from that. Like the Ricochet Ibushi match, that one should have been the one that was the stepping stone, because that one like really, really like walked a fine line. But I came away with it thinking it was a great match, and that even though it was a spot fest, generally the spots that were happening there were the progression was right and they made sense, and everything that they did was believable. There wasn't anything, you know, like as the match got through like the first few minutes, there wasn't anything that they were doing that I was like, oh, that's BS, right? Everything they did, I thought, yeah, that makes sense. That could happen. Like the flip off the Hurricane Rana when he landed off on his feet, that was fine. I didn't have any problem with that. And so, yeah, I think this is worse than that. I'm not saying it's bad. More like I said, it might not be for me. But I think if anybody objectively watched those two matches back to back, think you would think that Ibushi and Ricochet was the better match, because it looked like a legitimate fight, and the finishes and everything in there, they were all the way that they should be.
Now, are you saying that there's a place for this Osprey and Ricochet match because you're trying to be nice? I mean, because the whole thing is like, we, you know.
No, like, it's like,
why would you support a bunch of smarks going like, that's the best match I've ever seen, which a lot of people are saying.
I'm not supporting that. I mean, I think if they're saying that, then, like, their view is pretty narrow on what it is. But I think the people, I mean, that's fine. I think it's fine if people like that.
Is it good or bad for the business?
I don't think it's either good nor bad. I think it's good in some ways, because they are pushing the limits of the athleticism. I think that, and even like the retired guys and the old timers say it, like the athletes today are much better than the athletes were before, and so there should be some kind of push to see like how far they can go. I don't have a problem with them doing that, and if people like it, that's fine. But I think most of the people that are going to like that are pretty rookie to watching wrestling, and they gotta, you gotta understand kind of like where a lot of the base for it's from. I mean, if that's what they like, that then you know, so be it. But like, that's never going to, like, that kind of match is never going to play in the WWE, right? Not to say that the WWE is the be all end all, right? But like the skills that Ricochet has could make him a huge star in the WWE, but not him doing a match like that. Okay, he's gonna, and Ospreay too. Ospreay even more so than Ricochet. Like the moveset that he relies on, that is not going to play in the WWE. It's just not. I think I've seen enough different Ricochet matches.
Yeah,
he's adaptable. That guy can wrestle as well. But if that's what Ospreay is, because I do think, like, you know, that's the first Ospreay match I've seen. I've heard a lot about him last year or so. But if that's like what his offense is, I mean, it's like he's the English Rey Mysterio. So I mean, I guess some people would like it. And that's the thing. Like, I don't like Rey Mysterio, but there's plenty of guys that do like Rey Mysterio. I think, you know, he could play really big on like a Lucha Underground, like a Luchador type show. But like, I think that whole stuff comes off really corny once you start putting them in with guys that are like, okay, you put Ospreay in WWE right now, and then say he has to go wrestle a match against Cesaro. Okay, none of that stuff's gonna play. I mean, it's gonna be, Cesaro's gonna be trying to jump up and down and break his back doing backflips trying to sell offense for this guy. It's just not gonna happen. And I think that's the problem. Like, you can do some of that stuff, like you said, in a Super Juniors tournament, or maybe that would get over in the WWE's Cruiserweight tournament that they're gonna have. But there's no sustainability for that on a main roster. Like, put him against, I'll say it, put him against John Cena. He can't, there's no way, that's gonna be a terrible looking match. John Cena can't sell that kind of offense, and it's not gonna look believable for.
Maybe that's not a good but I'm, good reference.
No, I mean, but
John Cena can't sell anything.
No, but it's valid. I think it's valid though. I mean, just
John Cena couldn't sell hot cocoa to a bunch of people stranded in Antarctica. There we go. John Cena couldn't sell,
but he would never give up.
Yeah. I'm kind of in the camp of MVP, right? It's like, my whole thing is like, okay, push it, right? Push the match to his extreme. That is the extreme of acrobatics and flips and kicks. I mean, there was good spots in it, but my whole thing is like, don't let that be the standard of what that's going to be. I mean, I'm hoping these two guys, and I think Ricochet might be the guy. I don't know enough about Ospreay, but I hope both of these guys look at that match instead of patting themselves on the back, going, okay, that was a really, you know, that was a fun match, and we put it out there to see what happens. I mean, that's like, you know, you or me, you know, like if we're really like tired, sick of our job or something like that, you know, and we, one day we just like say exactly what we want to say. Like, you go in your classroom and say exactly the way it is, right? You'll be given a pass, maybe, you know, and that's like me like going in what I do and telling everybody like, well, this is the way it is and this is the way it's supposed to be. I'll get a pass for that first day. But you try bringing that stuff around the second day or the third or fourth time that I see someone, my career is over, your career is over. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the way that it needs to be. It's like, this was put out there, you know, it's like, this is put out there. This is what wrestling can be. But they have to also take stuff from the greatest wrestling matches that they've seen. And why was it so great? Because there's no match that was like that. And they can't say like, well, this is like an homage to this match. No, it's like, you guys just put a match out there that nobody's ever seen before. A lot of it didn't make any sense. A lot of it was like a lot of spot fest that works in the indies. You're doing it at a major promotion. If you're saying that, you know, you're a fan of this guy, or this guy inspired you, then you better go watch that wrestler and see what made him so inspiring. It wasn't his spots. It's the way he connected with fans. You're not going to connect with fans that way. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to connect with fans that way in the WWE. It's going to get booed out. You know, it'll get booed out. You know, people will like it in the beginning. It's kind of like Kalisto, right? Like Kalisto, when he was conservative with his moves, it's like, you know, that's believable. And when he started doing all that Rey Mysterio garbage, we're like, you know, you're done. You know, there's no place for you in the WWE.
Right. And I guess maybe also this kind of goes as like the full extension of sports entertainment, right? This is like on that line of sports entertainment. And that's why I think it's valid. I mean, like, I hear a lot of tweets or things that the wrestlers say, and they're talking about how, like, they look at wrestling as performance art. And this is an extension of wrestling being performance art. It very similar. The thing that like stuck in my mind when I saw it first was the Joey Ryan penis spots. Right? It's like I think it's kind of dumb. It's got some comedy value to it, but you know it's taking like it's not wrestling. It's taking it to this sports entertainment, and that's kind of along the lines of this. How far like are we going to go away from? You know, having it at its base be like a fight to now just being like pure performance and kind of like leaving like kind of the grounded in reality thing behind. So that's kind of where I am on it.
Yeah, and the thing is that it's professional wrestling, right? Mm-hmm. And there was not a lot of wrestling in that match. But, I mean, to each his own. I appreciated the effort they tried to do. I appreciated what they did. There's an appreciation to it, but looking back, in, you know, in retrospect and hindsight, I don't ever want to see a match like that again. You know, because it's like it's everything that I hate about indie wrestling. It's like backyard wrestling. It's backyard wrestling done by like world professional athletes, the guys that can do it. You know, and the only difference is like these guys are cut for the most part. They're way better than any backyard guy or indie wrestler is, but. I've seen some indie wrestlers pull off moves like that as well, and where are they? You know, it's like mm-hmm. you can't. It doesn't draw money, mm-hmm. and it's not good for the business in terms of, you know, even like someone said like you know oh we you know I would show like people that don't watch wrestling I'd show them this match. I'm like really, like I would show them a lot of different of the matches, like you know I'd show them some Nakamura matches or I'd show them. You know, some CM Punk matches. I'd show him Macho Man. I'd show him Ric Flair and Ricky the Dragon. I'd show him Ricky the Dragon Steamboat matches up the ass because, I mean, this guy's had great matches with a lot of people.
I mean, even, like, not even going that far away from it, I don't see how you could watch that match and watch Ricochet, Ibushi, and think that match was better.
Yeah.
I just don't see, like...
A lot of people that didn't see that match. That's the problem, right?
Maybe so. I mean, I don't know. Did they not? Maybe so. Maybe not.
Ricochet and Osprey, they're entertaining. They are entertaining. But at the same time, it's like I have to suspend I have to suspend my belief to watch professional wrestling in the first place. But you're asking me to like totally like just throw it away. Yeah. and like you know, and it's like watching a floor program in gymnastics. You know, I don't sit there and go when the Olympics come around going like I want to see the floor program, right? And I want to see them with their stupid little moves and their little dancing, their stupid ass music, and I've never clapped. I've never went like wow, that was really good. It's like okay, you're doing flips, good for you. It's kind of like the same thing when there's dancing competitions, right? And they have like these little dance troops and it's like America Got Talent and they're doing all these flips and stuff. I'm like that and dancing, dude, you're fucking flipping all over the place. So same kind of thing.
Yeah, but like at the same time, you respect the athleticism.
I respect it.
And it's like you know,
not I don't, saying, I don't like it. I think they suck, but I respect it.
I wouldn't say I think they suck.
No, I don't think those guys suck. I'm talking about the dance troupe that's doing like flips and stuff. You know, it's like there's yeah, good for you. You know,
go play a real sport.
Son. Yeah. look at the Carlito ain't no the way he dances. He's Italian.
All right. Is there any other? Anything that you wanted to get at? I mean, we've gone pretty deep on two topics. Yeah. I mean, we haven't talked for a couple of weeks on this, so I mean,
we still have Game of Thrones too.
We do.
Game of Thrones has been epic, dude.
Let's see. Dude, is there any other thing that you had that you wanted to talk about?
No, I mean, I think you know, it's the same. It's the same old argument. You know, it's the same old thing that problem I have with is like John Cena getting involved in terms of two really hot angles with I just talked about this guy with Guns and Gallows and AJ Styles, and then also riding on the coattails of New Day as well. Mm-hmm. I think I don't like it.
Yeah,
you know, and it's a bad trend. And when I was really happy when AJ turned on John Cena, and then talking to you about it, you weren't too happy about it because you felt that AJ was going to be put off to the side when the program's over. There is. I think John Cena being absent for a long time has really showed there's no place for this guy anymore. They have way better performers, way better guys on the mic. I mean, John Cena is such a paper superstar. And it's kind of like the same thing. Like, everybody that likes John Cena, for the most part, are kids that don't know any better. You know, and that's like their introduction to wrestling is John Cena. He's like Bruno Sammartino all over again, right? Like, we were lucky enough that we didn't grow up during the Bruno Sammartino time, but we look back at Bruno Sammartino and go like, man, who the hell was this guy? It's the same thing with Michael Jordan, right? Michael Jordan, best basketball player I've ever seen, but what's his legacy, right? He doesn't have a legacy because he's a jerk.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but not to say that he's not a jerk. I would go as far as to say he doesn't have a legacy.
He has a legacy, but it's not like a lasting. It's not like, you know, you say Michael Jordan, and I'm not like going, and there's, I'm not overcome with emotion, right? Like, you, if I would say like Babe Ruth, Joe DiMaggio,
it's or Lou Gehrig, Karl Malone too many times.
Karl Malone's the same way. Like, Karl Malone, it's not like I'm going crazy.
I was just taking a dig at you.
No, it's all good.
Back to what you're saying, though. I did that. That was my opinion on John Cena coming back with AJ Styles. I teach history, so I look at history, and history says AJ Styles is going to win their first match and then lose the next however many times they fight. Here's the one thing that I did find kind of interesting. Well, I did find interesting with that promo, the little exchange that they had. John Cena. Like, he said something that was, I thought it was, like, right on the line, kind of crossing the line. He kind of said, like the AJ Styles, like, he came in here and he failed and he wasn't that good, and then he was going back down the line, which I thought was, that's a little harsh, right?
Whoa, John. Whoa.
Right. I mean, like, as being the number one guy and being someone that's supposed to be, you know, theoretically, like, building guys around him, right? But I thought like, that the even better comeback, and I thought AJ was really pushing the line with this, too, is saying, like, you know, whenever you come back, guys like you come at me
and
you get the shovel out and you bury him. And I thought that was almost, like, breaking the fourth wall. It was that was just kind of pushing it. I thought, like,
oh, it's John Cena can break the fourth wall.
I'm not saying I had a problem with it. I'm just saying like I don't know how on script that was, right? I don't know if McMahon would really want him going that far as to, you know, that's a little bit like real for wrestling. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, you know, I think that's exactly what's going to happen.
Well, there's a couple things that I had a problem with Cena's return, with the big one being that he returned. But the one thing, I mean, like, there's stuff that doesn't make sense, right?
Was it the picture of Ellen DeGeneres on his jorts by any chance?
No, it was, like I said before, like his new shirt. I really like how he pays tribute to Ken Shamrock, putting Ken Shamrock on his shirt. I know that there were some problems with the, you know, legally with the shirt that came out before, but that's one of the worst drawings I've ever seen. It looks like Ken Shamrock. Get out of my way. And there's a bunch of dog food on his chin. But I felt that he was going against script, and I don't understand why he was, but he was putting down like the new era of this new era of wrestling, wherein, usually like he's the guy that, you know, like, so the person that doesn't like the new era of wrestling is like Stephanie McMahon, right? And Shane McMahon is the one that's proposed the new era, and he's a fan favorite. Well, John Cena's coming out saying, like, you know, this new era, this, that, and this. He's like, I'm the glass ceiling, and you're gonna have to try to break it, but you'll never break it because I'm a paper champion, and, you know, and I like to look at Mr. McMahon's belly button every now and then. But yeah, so you have that, and then you have like the promo that he cuts with AJ Styles and stuff. So I don't, you know, I'm not gonna say that maybe he's turning. Maybe John Cena's gonna turn heel. He's gonna turn heel, man. John Cena's gonna turn heel. Everything's gonna be good in the world. While you wear your NWO shirt.
Yeah.
It might happen, dude. John Cena's gonna turn heel. I'm dancing like a little girl right now.
And be terrible at it. the only thing that I wanted to bring up, and I'll bring it up now. I don't know how
Like, be happy about it.
This know? Could be, all I'm saying is this could be another 20, 30 minute discussion, which we don't have time for. Okay. But, you know, I'm very curious to see what's going to happen with this, with the brand split. I mean, I think that's a very interesting thing that's being put out on the table right now, because it's like, okay, and we haven't talked in so long, right? There's so many stuff, things that...
Holla.
Yeah, not him, but like... Like, you talk about they're going to split the rosters and they have unique rosters. So all the talk you hear is about how, like, okay, now this is a chance to kind of utilize this deep roster that they have. And what do they do, like, a month before they're going to this brand split? They get rid of Damian Sandow, Cody Rhodes walks, they get rid of Wade Barrett. I don't like him, but they get rid of Ryback as another guy that they've, you know, I think he sucks, but they've invested several years in trying to build this guy, right? And so it's like... You know, if you're going to have these, like, unique brands on SmackDown and Raw, how do you go ahead and get rid of, like, four guys that you've, you know, three that I think are extremely talented, and the other one, at least, you know, you've invested time building this guy as a character. Like, I don't see... So, I think, like, my speculation is going to be all those guys in NXT are going to have to get drafted to one of those shows. And they may be going from NXT to SmackDown back to NXT, and then the other guys are going Raw to NXT and back and forth. But I think that these guys in NXT, I think they're going to be on these main rosters here in the next couple of months, and I think that's a very interesting dynamic as well. Like, because, you know, I mean, Nakamura as a prime example. I mean, if you're going to have these two unique rosters, and you put
Nakamura on SmackDown, and SmackDown's fine,
right? But that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. because we, you know, was wondering how long is Nakamura going to be in developmental. Samoa Joe's another one that. He's the first name, even before Nakamura, that comes to mind. Like, you're going to put... Joe's going to have to go to one of these shows at least, you know.
Yeah.
And I think it becomes extremely interesting when you start thinking about...
Well, the problem I have is I hope you don't have... And maybe you know more about this than I do, but I don't want to have a SmackDown champion. I don't want to have a Raw champion.
There is talk that they're going to bring back another title for...
Yeah, see, and my whole thing is like... I think I don't mind having two different tag team champions, you know, like a tag team champion for SmackDown, a tag team champion for Raw. You know, if you put the United States with SmackDown or with
they're going to split those two.
Which is fine, no big deal, right? But the overall title, I feel that if you're going to be champion, then I think you should be on both shows, you know, and I don't know if that's not really plausible either, because I mean, he has a feud. Someone has a feud with the guy on Raw, and he has a feud with SmackDown. I'm just saying, like, if feud wise, I would like to see a guy from SmackDown have the ability to challenge a guy from Raw, and not make it SmackDown versus Raw. But as we know, if you're going to have one McMahon at SmackDown, the other McMahon at Raw, you're going to have that stuff, and then it becomes a big mess again. So I don't know. I mean, maybe it's a complete brand split, and now that SmackDown's live, maybe that's the way to go. And, you know, and let's see what it is, because, you know, there's a ton of talent there, right? I mean, even like the Divas division, right? I mean, like, you know, I haven't seen the Boss for like a month and a half. You know, it's like if she gets like regular play on one of those shows, I'm fine.
She's been injured.
Yeah, but still, you know what I mean.
Yeah. But yeah, or maybe they
Stone Cold Steve Austin was injured as well.
Yes,
and he was still on TV every guaranteed every week.
Well, I liked back when they had the brand split before. Like, the tag team champions were like the only guys that could do both shows, and I think maybe you do something like that with your world champion can do both shows, or maybe anyone who's a champion. Yeah, maybe not your mid card titles, but your world and your tag team champion can go back between two shows.
Yeah,
something like that. But yeah, the discussion is that they might bring back another title for SmackDown.
I mean, if you have it a case where the United States Championship in SmackDown is like the equivalent to the world's title, you know, that they had before, and the Intercontinental Champion and Raw is like kind of like the champion there, and then you have the main champion kind of going where he needs to go. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. I don't know. I don't know if it would work. I don't know if it is, but that's an idea as well.
If you're going to take one of those two mid-carders and make that the main belt on SmackDown, I'd prefer it to be Intercontinental.
Yeah.
I think you go Intercontinental is the belt on SmackDown.
I think what you can do is you can maybe what you do is you have the U.S. kind of go back and forth.
I say maybe you go US on Raw, and then by that time, maybe you have a cruiserweight title, and maybe that cruiserweight title is something that is exclusive to SmackDown, and then your tag team champions go between the two, do something like that.
All right. So
Divas probably should go back and forth.
Whenever they come a knocking on our door to help them with creative, we got the plan for them right there.
There we go.
So speaking of doors, more specifically, Hodor. Just huge things in Game of Thrones. And the funny thing is with the Game of Thrones is like stuff that hasn't even happened yet. But
it's so slow that you love it.
Well. So this past Sunday's Game of Thrones was very slow, but it made it good. But it's all the stuff that kind of needs to be reintroduced. But the Hound, dude, man, I marked out when I saw the Hound. I was the first one to say that he'd never die.
Oh, I believe you universally panned me for saying that I never saw him die.
Yeah, George R. R. Martin, he sold out, dude. Come on, you know.
Hey, that's not on him. That's on the writers of the show. But hey, I'm all for it. I told you I was really I was a big fan of the Hound. I wasn't even waiting. You told me he was dead, and I believed you.
You asked me if I thought he was dead, and I was like, yeah. I said.
That I didn't think he was dead because
you said that.
I said I didn't think that he was dead because I didn't see him die, and you said, "Well, so in the book he died, so he's dead."
I don't know. I don't remember from the book. He might still be. I don't know. But I guess the guiding principle we need to follow on the Game of Thrones is that whatever your theories are, you're usually correct. So no longer am I going to be like the predominant force of what's going to happen, but. I do think that I don't know. I mean, I might be pleasantly surprised, but I think the siege at Winterfell isn't going to go well. And not because of the reason why most people think it is. I think she's going to ask for the Knights of the Vale to help out. And I think what's-his-name is going to... Littlefinger is going to do something to double-cross him or something. I think he's the one that started the whole Game of Thrones. He killed like John Arryn and stuff or whatever that mm-hmm. brought, you know, the king's, all that, whatever it is. He started the whole thing. Right. Whenever you think that this guy's like a fan of the Starks, he turns him around. So it's already being set up that Winterfell's not going to go well, but I think it's not going to go well because of Littlefinger. Tell me your prediction on this siege.
Well, I just, on the way here, I was reading something online and it said that like some Redditor had like, looked close, and in fact, that letter was written to Littlefinger. So,
yeah.
So that seems like that's...
So I was right this yes. time. Yeah.
Well, yes. So you're definitely right that's who the letter is written to. How's the siege going to go on Winterfell yet? I haven't really... Because I just saw that like right as I was walking up to the door, so I haven't really processed what I think's going to happen. I don't know, because... Yeah, I could see where like Jon Snow comes down there, does Ramsay Bolton, everybody's like super happy, and then Littlefinger shows up and could they kill Jon Snow second time?
Again.
That would be crazy. That would piss a bunch of people off. I'm just curious to see like what forces Jon Snow is gonna gather together, right? It's like he's really struggling to put this army together right now, but you're starting to see like things like Arya's looks like she's gonna come back to Westeros.
If she survives,
right? The Hound,
but she will. But
yeah. Right, the Hound is back in the picture, right? I think there's a lot of kind of pieces just floating around there that if they all came together and banded together with Snow, like could make a really formidable force. But like Littlefinger's a survivor. Like that's the thing. It's like both those. It's like Thunderdome, right? Someone's gonna get Ramsay, but when Jon Snow and Littlefinger,
two men
enter, one man leaves, right? And I think that's the beauty of the show. It's like traditionally you'd say, yeah, Jon Snow is gonna win, but the way the show is, like anybody can die at any time.
I think the end game for Jon Snow, and he doesn't know it yet, is it's gonna be. I think Jon Snow and what's her name? They're going to be the kind of they're going to join forces.
Daenerys,
yeah. I think that's kind of the.
But he'd have to survive this siege at Winterfell.
In order to make and people are forgetting that Jon Snow is probably the he's the legitimate child of Rhaegar and Lyanna Stark. I can't believe I remembered her name. Is it Lyanna Stark? That was the sister, that right?
Sounds right? Yeah. Well, the other thing too, we didn't even mention. I'm talking about people kind of like kind of middling around here. Bran Stark and Benjen, right? And
yeah.
Like if they come back down to the Wall, I mean, shit. Like Benjen and Bran could be a big help in trying to regain. Like it's building to potentially like a huge Stark family reunion at Winterfell, which that would be crazy if you get all these guys kind of fighting together.
Well, the one thing you can happen too is that Siege of Winterfell. When that happens, well, the White King can attack at the same time. You know, and so, I mean, and that's Bran's kind of role right now, right? It's like Bran has to, like, teach people how to fight the White Walkers because even though, like, what's his name, killed a White Walker with obsidian, like, nobody's putting two and two together, right? It's like, well, why did he die? It's like, well, because I used obsidian. Like, well, we should probably, and why are we, like, unburying all this obsidian stuff? And there must be a reason why. And nobody's putting two and two together. It's like, really? I'm like, you don't realize that obsidian kills White Walkers? You guys could, like, just, like, take care of the whole thing of just, like, shooting a bunch of obsidian arrows at all these guys, but that'd be way too easy.
Yeah.
Right?
Plus, Sam's got the big Valyrian sword now.
Yeah. Yeah, he stole it. Yeah. So, whatever. And I think Valyrian steel also...
That's the Valyrian steel and...
And obsidian are the two weapons.
Dragon glass, yes.
Yeah.
Could theoretically...
Don't ask me, dude. You know?
Could a dragon kill a walker?
Probably. Well, yeah, I mean, because some of that, the other reason why they won that fight and kind of established Castle Black was with dragons as well. So, I mean, that was kind of like Daenerys's, you know, precursors. You also had Bran the Builder. Like, so when they're showing that whole scene of, like, them, like, building that thing, and I thought it was like, oh, that's probably a flashback to Bran the Builder, who was, like, you know, a major Stark way back when. And then you see the Hound. I was like, God damn, dude. I'm like, the Hound's back, dude. I was giddy. I was overwhelmed when I saw the Hound come back. So it'll be interesting to see. He'll be Sam's going to save Arya. Either Sam's going to save her, or the actress is going to save her. So we'll see how she comes back. She's going to live, right? Now I'm asking you.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's role reversal now.
She's going to make it.
Hey, better have my done. Is she going to live?
my other thing is I believe that this guy. I don't know his name, but you know, he's the brother of he's the guy that took over the Iron Islands.
Yeah.
I think he's going to build this fleet and he's going to go try to court Daenerys, and I think she's going to fucking kill him and all his punks and take the boats and start to cross the sea.
So in the book the brother win that the guy that became the king, he wins. There's another brother, and that brother is going to try to win Daenerys and then, like, get Daenerys on his side. But see, in this Game of Thrones, the sister's taking, you know, Theon's sister's still in the book. She's a great character. She's kind of bisexual. So it's kind of interesting to see her, like, be a lesbian. Like, cause it wasn't really mentioned in the book, cause she would take on, like, male lovers and stuff like that. So, but hey, to each her own. It was nice to watch. There's no Asian girl in it though, but she's kind of taking the role of, like, she's going to go and try to get her and stuff. I don't think she's going to kill Theon her.
I think the brother's going to go there, and I think the brother thinks that he's going to be able to kind of, like, strong arm and charm Daenerys, and I think she's going to lure him in and do him quick, and then
in what way? Kill him?
Death.
Oh, okay.
And then if his people want to stay with her, then they will, and if they don't, then I think they're going to all get just slaughtered, and then...
Daenerys has a way of getting people to her side, yeah.
Right.
Very, very charismatic.
But those... for whatever reason, those Ironborn seem to be pretty loyal to their causes, right? So, I could see where she kills the leader, and the rest of them don't fall in line, and then she just offs them, and then now there you go, 1,000, because they kept saying, like, what do we need to get across? What do we need to get all these soldiers across? We need 1,000 ships. And that guy's like, well, we're going to build 1,000 ships and go to Marine. So, yeah, good luck to you. It's not going to go well.
So now it's going to happen because you just said that. That's what's going to happen. Yes. So in order to keep this charade up where you're – and it's not a charade because you're always right, but my charade. It's like, you know, that doesn't happen. That's not going to happen, dude. Man, you're so fucking stupid. Right. Man, this goes in the rank of like your Obi-Wan, him being a clone and stuff. Man, that's so dumb, dude. You're such a fanboy. Okay.
All right.
Good. All right. So move the scale. I don't even know what number this is. It's been a long time.
We don't do that gimmick anymore.
No more. Yeah. Sorry, man. Ooh, hey. I didn't mean to get, you know, you start talking about Muhammad Ali and you get all serious on me, dude. Bet I have my donuts over here on Bad News Ramen. I think we'll check you out next week. It looks good.
Looks promising. You know, I don't see what would possibly stop me.
The weather's great. The
golf course looked good. My golf swing feels good. I like my chances.
All right, Muscale, yeah. And he never took a stand either. Muscale, number whatever it is. Bet I have my donuts on Bad News Ramen. We'll check you out next week.